Welcome to episode 141 of the Sports Geek Podcast. On this week's episode, we chat Detroit Tigers opening day with Max Slavin.
Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host, who still takes IT support calls from his parents, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, there's even a link on SeanCallanan.com that I send my dad to every time he has problems with his computer, but that's all right. My name is Sean Callanan, and you're listening to the Sports Geek Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. Tell us what it is. Where do you listen to the podcast? Do you listen to it on Sports Geek HQ? Do you listen to it on Pocket Cast, Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes? We are at 110 reviews worldwide. So thank you for those who've left a review. I'm sure you are one of them. If you haven't, please just go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes. It will take you to the iTunes store. You can leave a quick review. All much appreciated. Got a good episode coming up here. Had a good chat with the Detroit Tigers, Max Slavin. Unfortunately, wasn't able to catch Mac while I was in Detroit. Very thankful for Jim Darrow for giving me a bit of a tour of Comerica Park and seeing it. And one of the things that was consistent in talking to all the people in Detroit was everyone talking about what a big day opening day was in Detroit. It was almost a holiday for the city, and everyone talking about how much it is a big day, such a party atmosphere. And so I reached out to Mac back via the Sports Biz Slack and sort of said, let's catch up, talk about that, and talk about how his role has changed over the years at the Tigers and sort of the importance of spring training and some of the storytelling options that offers. So this is my chat with Max Slavin from the Detroit Tigers. Very happy to welcome Max Slavin from the Detroit Tigers. He is the digital and social media specialist at the Tigers. Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast, Mac.
Thanks for having me.
As I said, just in the prep there, recently I was in Detroit for I think it was a total of 36 hours, and I think I missed Mac by about 30 minutes in catching up, but I'm glad we're able to catch up on the podcast.
Yeah, for sure. It was great. I'm glad you enjoyed your time in Detroit. Bummed that we couldn't catch up.
Well, I think the main reason was, and I think when we did connect, we're both in the Sports Biz Slack, and I said, I'm going to be in town, and you were pretty much in the throes of spring training and spring training work life, which from my observations in watching baseball, especially as digital has grown, and it's very much tracked across a bunch of different sports, that preseason just seems to be getting bigger and bigger and more important. Probably more so in a digital sense, because the full media coverage isn't quite there yet. So the fans are just clamoring for anything. Are you finding that with the Tigers around spring training?
Yeah, for sure. I think especially with the Tigers, because it gets so cold in the off season in Michigan that any sight of spring or warm weather, people are so excited for. So I think that goes with a lot of teams that are up north, but people are really excited to see any form of green grass, things like that. Not to mention that baseball season's back and everything like that. But, it's spring training starting. It's that sign that warmer weather is ahead and the snow is hopefully behind us.
Exactly. As someone who's been to Detroit in the depths of winter, I understand that. And even when I was there and it was quite mild, I can understand the requirement for that. So, yeah, take us through, because you're in Detroit and it is cold, where did the Tigers hold spring training? You're lucky enough to take in some of that warm weather.
Yeah, so we're down in Florida. We're down in Lakeland, Florida. It's central Florida, so about hour from Tampa and an hour from Orlando. So we're kind of the center of the Grapefruit League, and it's personally, I love it, because in February when it's cold and snowy up here, I get to go down to the warm Florida. But we do a lot of stuff with our fans down there. We try to give our fans the best look that they can down there. One of the things that we really like to try and highlight, I mean, we highlight our superstars, you know, our big names, that type of thing. But this is where we can really get up close with a lot of our prospects as well, which is part of the reason that I like spring training too, because, you know, hopefully you see some of these guys, you'll end up seeing some of these guys in the major leagues, you know, maybe this season or within the next couple of years. And it's always fun to start tracking them and follow them, you know, come spring training.
And so is it really that part of, you know, you have got the stars, they know who the stars are, but it's about starting to uncover your next generation or your next star or the next call up. So those diehard fans that are tuned into spring training, they know everyone on your roster, they know the new prospects, and they're just, but they're just wanting you to provide as much information, whether it be, you know, a clip on Snapchat or a photo or saying how they're going or a couple of practice swings, and you're starting to build up that story. So when they do hit the big leagues, your fans are starting to be familiar with them.
Yeah. You know, one thing that we always hate is when, if we call up someone, you know, in the middle of the season, you know, baseball can be, there's a lot of ups and downs in baseball. We bring up a lot of guys for maybe a couple weeks because there's an injury or something along those lines. And the last thing you want as an organization is, hey, we're calling up X player XYZ. The last thing you want is the first comment to be who, yeah, or who is that? I don't know who that is. So, you know, we try and help build up some of those younger guys. And, you know, sometimes it's easier said than done, or sometimes guys come out of nowhere and we don't really get a chance to highlight them, but we try and do our best to cover them. And spring training's a great spot for that because we get kind of that up close and personal action with them. And, you know, when they're in AAA or AA, we don't necessarily get that close because, I mean, our closest affiliate's an hour away. And so yep. We try and, you know, go back and forth with them on Twitter, you know, that type of thing. But we don't have that personal connection with them right away.
And from a social media platform mix for spring training, what were some of your go-to platforms? Were you leaning into Snapchat stories more? Were you using Instagram stories? Was it a bit of a mix? What was your sort of game plan around spring training to sort of bubble that story to the surface on social at least?
Yeah, we stuck to kind of what I call the big four. Yep. And it used to be the big three, but Snapchat's in there now. You know, we stuck to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. One thing we did a little differently this year was I didn't really want our Instagram stories and our Snapchat to be the exact same thing.
Yep.
You know, because initially when we started Instagram stories last year, they kind of were the same thing, maybe just from different angles or different moments in the game, but they looked like the same thing. And so this year we didn't really do much with Instagram stories during workouts. I would come back in from workouts and pick the best 5 to 10 pictures and maybe 1 to 2 video clips. And we started calling it Today in Lakeland.
Okay.
And it was kind of just a recap of the day, all in one spot, ready to go. But it was our best photos. It was some of our best video. You know, it was kind of that, you know, highlight reel.
Yeah, so that produced news report that you could consume in the Instagram stories.
Yeah, just because while we were thinking it through, every idea we kind of threw out there for Instagram stories was basically just reiterated in Snapchat. And yep. So kind of to keep the two platforms different, we thought of going Today in Lakeland. And I think a lot of people liked it. There was one day where I was actually gone. I was doing something else while I was down in Lakeland and didn't get very many photos or anything. And a couple of fans asked, you know, where was Today in Lakeland? So I assume they liked it.
Well, that's what you're always looking to do. You're always looking to, as a content producer, build up an asset that is wanted, that hits a fan demographic that says, hey, I want this every, you know, and also the timing, the fact that you're, you know, every day at 6, you know, here's the news at 6 type of thing, that you're producing mm-hmm. this thing that they're sitting there going, I'm ready for it. And if your fans are complaining that your bit of content that you've been giving them is not out at the same time, then you know you're hitting the mark. I mean, fan complaints is a really good metric if you're not getting them, because then you have got this asset. And then if you look at I spend a lot of my time on the on the commercial side of the digital, like once you've got an asset that's wanted, it's very easy to start integrating commercial partners or ticketing messages and those kind of things because, you know, it's something that they want to do or want to watch, I should
exactly.
say. Exactly. So the other part of it is that I find interesting, and I really love the tactic of keeping Instagram stories and Snapchat stories separate because, yeah, if there's this sameness, there's no opportunity for growth on both platforms. I have seen a bit of a snap back with the copy wars that's happening between Instagram and Snapchat, and now that you know the developments just in the last couple of days that it looks like the Instagram Stories module is going to come to Facebook natively, which is going to be another game changer, I guess. I think the main thing is a lot of teams or a lot of people going, oh, Instagram, that's easier. I've already got my fan base on Instagram. There's a whole bunch of people. Oh, and there's been a bit of a tendency to go, oh, Snapchat's just too hard. It's a sleeping giant. Like you said, it's no longer the big three. It is the big four. You've got to provide something on that platform. So I think it was at South by Southwest, Gary Vaynerchuk sort of said, you know, a lot of people are abandoning Snapchat for Instagram because there's more numbers on Instagram, but it's just lazy to abandon it because it's such a big and engaging platform for us, you know, for that younger demographic. It's crazy to abandon it.
Yeah, I mean, we see a lot of views on Snapchat. Obviously, you know, similar to kind of what you were saying, some of our numbers are bigger on Instagram stories, but the number of times, and I actually haven't seen this with Instagram stories yet, the number of times we post something on Snapchat and I see a screenshot on Twitter or Instagram or, you know, that type yep. of thing, it happens all the time. And to be honest, I haven't seen that with any Instagram story that we've posted yet. So I definitely think you'd be missing your mark if you decided to hop off the other one. I think the one thing that is really setting Snapchat apart is the whole spectacles thing.
Yep.
You know, we grabbed a pair and we had a pair down at spring training for a couple of days, and we'll have a couple pair for the season. But I think that's kind of what kind of differentiates the two of them. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how teams, especially now that Instagram stories have been around for a while, how they kind of differentiate the two during the season.
And I, as someone who's been an owner of spectacles for now, I think 18 days, I think it is really interesting. I think you've got an athlete base that is very comfortable with Snapchat. Like they're using it as their primary messaging platform, you know, and it's going to be, you know, I do think in the next 12 to 18 months, it potentially will win the war for the athlete as a broadcasting sort of platform because it is broadcasting and there's not as much problem with trolls and people commenting and things like that. I think as they become more comfortable and become more public being Snapchatters and then potentially being, you know, the ability for you to say, here, guys, here's the spectacles. You're on the road, snap them and then hand them back to me and you'll pair them and, you know, you'll still have to sift through what's good and what's bad. But you'll get some really good stuff that way. And the fans will just go, I do want that player point of view on things.
Exactly. I think you also hit the nail on the head, too, with the whole there's less trolls on Snapchat, too, which I think the guys like a lot. Would, you know, that helps their adoption and us trying to get them to help us out with things as well.
I think it was Serena Williams when she was out here for the Australian Open that was talking about why she uses Snapchat, because she puts out her content and that's all that happens. She doesn't have everyone commenting about it. She decides who she wants to follow and who she allows to message her. And it goes against, I guess, what social was in the beginning when it was, oh, social is great, you can connect with your fans, but without solving that problem of trolls and unfortunately the internet is full of bad people, you know, without taking away, you know, because no one solved that problem, and yet Twitter is probably copying it more than others, but it still happens on Instagram and Facebook. It's just not as in your face. If any athlete goes into their mentions on an Instagram post, there'll be just as many trolls there. It's just that it doesn't pop up in a in a feed that says, hey, someone just called you this. So I think that's a real, you know, I think that's going to be a real interesting thing. I think there's going to be a few, and you may have already had it, there's going to be a few awkward conversations between digital folk or maybe even and athletes and coaches, because you know that one of your players either is going to be using your specs or might even be using their own specs and go, I'm going to go out to batting practice, which would be an awesome experience, right? To feel like a pro hitter and the pitch coming in, but you know a coach mm-hmm. is going to say, oh no, there's some competitive advantage there. A pitcher will see your tell or see how you drop your, you know, it might be true, it might be not, but there will be a bit of pushback on that kind of stuff, no doubt. And I'm assuming in the next 12 to 18 months, someone will put out a great video that will get shut down by, I guess, the operations coaching staff, or whether it's in baseball or football, it'll definitely happen.
Yep. I could definitely see that happening. And that's always, but that's kind of the, you know, I don't want to call it a struggle, but, you know, the social media person's job is kind of like balancing that, you know, you never want to put out too much information, but you also want to give as close of a look as you can to everything.
Yeah, definitely. And so that's, it is that fine balance of backwards and forwards. And you need to have both comfort with the players, and they need to be comfortable with you, because, you know, there's a lot of trust in that, you know, you're around areas that other media aren't around, and they need to know that you're mm-hmm. not going to, you know, be pulling out your phone and taking photos when they're not wanting them. And so that just becomes, you know, a comfort thing. And things like spectacles will be, you know, I guess initially when you're walking around, everyone's just going, Mac, what are you doing? Are you recording me? And it's like, no, it's only when the little spinny thing's happening is when I'm recording. And even then I'll decide whether it goes out. So, so hopefully you get past a bit of that awkwardness and people start seeing what they are. We're recording this a couple of days before opening day. Jim Darrow, head of IT out there at the Tigers, took me for a bit of a tour of Comerica Park when I was there. And I think everybody I spoke to, both at the Tigers and at the Red Wings, who are across the road looking over Comerica, talked about opening day being almost a citywide holiday in Detroit. Can you explain to the listeners, one, what opening day is like, and then from your point of view, what do you look for and what do you try to plan for opening day?
Yeah, opening day is nuts here. I remember when I first started, I started in January, and everyone was trying to like warn me about how crazy opening day was. And I'd been to plenty of other opening days around the country. And I was like, well, you know, maybe they just think it's a big deal here in Detroit. And I'll never forget coming into work it was between 6 and 7 a.m. I was driving down the street and tailgate lots were already full. People were out ready to go. It's like a statewide holiday here, opening day is. And it's crazy. It's super fun. We have our home opener last year and this year happened to fall on a Friday. So it's even crazier than my first year when I believe it was a Monday or a Tuesday. Yeah, it goes nuts here, and we start producing content pretty early because we usually have a day game, planning for it is a interesting thing. I always try and overplan. We try to have as much content ready to go, but at the same time, there's so many organic and just natural moments that happen that we just try to place people in the right place at the right time. Trying to capture as much video and photos as possible. I remember last year, one of our guys just happened to be walking from – he was interviewing a couple people at a tailgate, and he was walking back into the ballpark and saw, you know, people just dressed up. There were people dressed in Tigers onesies [S2] Yep. [S1] And, like, pajamas, that type of thing. And so he got some great content there, and you just kind of have to have your head on a swivel and always keep your eye out for anything and everything that could happen. But it's crazy. Our fans go crazy, and it's probably one of the more fun days out of the year.
So just for context for everyone, you were talking about getting into work at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. I think Jim talks about getting there at 5:30 to let the TV to let the TV people in, and then there's people already like lining up to get into the tailgate. Game time.
Yep.
Game time's 1 o'clock.
Yeah, 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
And so you've got people tailgating at 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, getting ready for the game. They've got all their elaborate setups. It does seem, you know, it seems like a bit of a carnival atmosphere. So from, you know, so you've sort of got three parts of, you know, almost three parts of the game. You've got this build up tailgate part of the game where you want to be part of that celebration and capturing a lot of that content, getting, you know, some of it's capturing that content and getting it out right there and then to build up that excitement. Some of it is capturing that content, and if we shared all this content, it would just be overwhelming. So you're banking some of that content for the first week or so to sort of recap opening day because it's such a big event. Is that what you sort of mean by from a planning point of view, whether it's, hey, we're going to send out our video crew into the tailgate section and we don't know what's going to be out there, but we're going to go to the shiniest or the craziest or the most fun group and start getting some fan content. And then like those, you know, that organic, hey, look, there's a whole bunch of people in onesies and you get a good story out of it, comes out of that as well. And you've got enough flex in there to say, no, stay there. There's some really good content. We'll use it somewhere. Or you might actually get so much content that some might end up on the cutting room floor, and that's okay because you've just got a lot of content there.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a big proponent of, and all my coworkers will tell you this, I'd rather have way more content to pick from than have no content and have to put out, you know, kind of a, you know, a
yeah, he's the best
less
of
than a, ideal tweet or yeah, something like
he's
that.
He's the best
you know.
We've got. That's all we've got. Whereas if, you know, you send a photographer out there and say, just photograph everything, because eventually, you know, there'll be something that you'll find. But from a brief point of view, you're saying, you know, we want the fans, we want them smiling, we want them excitable. And because you can use it now or you could use it later.
Later. Yeah. Well, and a lot of that content, you know, we'll save a lot of it too for, you know, if we have different marketing initiatives throughout the year, or, you know, we want to make different gifts, or we want to, you know, there's a bunch of opportunities for us to reuse that content as well. And at the same time, people love opening day. So we start building up to opening day, you know, a couple weeks ahead of time, and we start doing some really, you know, people get excited. Last year, I believe we were trending nationwide by like 10 a.m. Our fans just get super excited and they go nuts. And it's just a lot of fun to watch and kind of be a part of. We try to plan out graphics and things like that. And don't get me wrong, we still have our produced, especially stuff related to the game graphics and everything that go out. But a lot of it is just, hey, look at those guys over there. Look at, you know, that. Or we always end up finding like four generations of fans, you know, something like that out there. That's just this really cool story that we can't pass up. So it's fun. It's crazy. I tell everyone just have their head on a swivel.
And do you find, you know, as the reach of digital and expands, that you're getting that same carnival vibe and excitement happening online for the people who aren't there? So whether it's a Tigers fan on the other side of the world or other side of the country or even in Detroit that can't go to the game, that they're just into, you know, getting into that build up and getting into the game as much as anything as the people who are there.
Yeah, and that's one thing we always try to highlight too. You know, opening day in Detroit has been big for a while. It's not like this has been big for the past couple of years. It's been big for quite a while. And so, you know, there's a lot of people that ended up moving away that we'll get pictures of people decked out in their Tigers gear in California or down in Florida. We actually have a lot of fans down in Florida because we play spring training down there.
Yep.
So they'll tweet in their pictures, or, you know, they'll post all their pictures on Instagram, things like that. So we try and reshare a lot of that content as well to show, hey, you know, the party's not just in Detroit. It's all over the place. We're all excited for the season.
So one of the things I have the advantage of at Sports Geek is working with multiple teams and multiple teams in different sports and sort of seeing how the fan groups are the same and are different. In your role previous to the Tigers, you were working with the professional bull riders.
Yep.
And running the social there, is there a comparison? What is the professional bull riding fan? Are they similar, different, the same? What are the nuances and differences between them and say Tigers and MLB fans?
Yeah. So, well, actually, right when I was at the Professional Bull Riders for a couple of years, and when I was there, they were in a transition, trying to grow their sport. They initially started off catering to your traditional Western fans, you know, your rodeo fans and things like that. They were in the transition process of, they wanted to be considered an action sport. They were trying to grow their sport and that type of thing. And so we were hitting a little bit of a different demo. And so that kind of helped transition me into Major League Baseball and stuff like that. But I would say your fan base, when it comes to excitement, they're both just as excited about events and that type of thing. But we definitely had different fan bases. But at the same time, I mean, PBR, they sell out Madison Square Garden in New York City, and they, you know, go to Chicago, go to LA, things like that, and do some pretty big events that do pretty well. But at the same time, a lot of our core audience was Texas, Oklahoma, you know, you're kind of what you would expect to be a bull riding fan.
I think the thing is, I guess the takeaway that I have is that, you know, every team, I like to say team rather than brand, because I think sports is different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, treating the PBR stuff as a team, like the core fans, the fans that are in, and the fans then that adopt the digital platforms, you know, whichever ones they are, they are very similar. Like, they're just as passionate, that they comment as much, or they retweet, and you sort of develop that, you know, what I call your digital cheer squad, the people that when you know you put a tweet out, they'll retweet it, or they will adopt a hashtag quickly, or that, you know, you say, hey, take a photo from the stands, and they do that. I think the really interesting bit is the stuff you're talking about before, as you're transitioning a team to go to a newer market, that's when you're in that educational piece of, well, we've got to teach people about how awesome our sport is, or how awesome it is, which you're still doing now, how awesome it is to be at Comerica Park, because you've got a lot of people that go there. And so you're still in that education piece of, I'm going to show Comerica Park in the best light possible. We're going to make sure our Instagrams are, you know, 11 out of 10. But then you're also leaning on that digital cheer squad to amplify that and promote that to their friends. And that's where I always see similarities in fan groups. So yes, you know, PBR might have a Midwestern demographic in Texas, and they might always be wearing cowboy boots and be different to the fan that's the Tigers fan. But when you get down to their core and you strip away some of the demo stuff, their actions and the way that they move and the way that they promote and the way that they, interact with the team, I find that to be a very similar. And that's where I've been able to, you know, take, you know, I have used the phrase on this podcast before, steal with pride. You know, something that you've done really well over here in, you know, with PBR can be applied and twisted and done the Tiger way. And then, you know, you can apply it to your fans, because that, you know, they move in the same manner. And so, you know, that's why I'm always interested in seeing, you know, talking to, you know, whether it be a music promoter or someone with a different brand, and saying, well, what's worked with you and your fans? Because elements of that or pieces of that will work with other fan groups. And so I think it's always good to be seeing what other fan groups are, how they're reacting to things, and seeing how then you can apply it to yours.
Yeah. And I mean, I always, one of the things I love about sports, I talk, you know, a lot of some of my other friends work in social for other brands, and they are always talking about brand ambassadors and how they need to, they're trying to get more brand ambassadors and things like that. And to be honest, in sports, your brand ambassadors, your biggest brand ambassadors are your biggest fans.
Yeah.
You know, they're the ones that are just stoked and ready to go. And they're, you know, for us, they're diehard Tigers fans or any other team, that type of thing. You said they'll share, they'll amplify, they'll go nuts. And that's, you can't ask for more from a social standpoint.
Yeah, that's so true. And, you know, I've spoken to a few people that, you know, work in sports, like yourself, long hours, weekends, and all of, you know, all the things, you know, all the things that come with sports. And then, you know, I've had people say, oh, I think I'm going to go to a corporate job and work in that digital space. and you know, talking to your friends who are in that space outside the world of sports, it's really tough. You've got to find those brand ambassadors, and no one puts their hand up and says, "I love my bank." And then the other thing is you don't have this, you know, never-ending supply of killer content. You know that all you've got to do is have a gif of a home run shot, and there you go. You know, you could just sit back and just watch the engagement come through. That's the really tough thing for corporate, you know, digital marketers to go, how do we engage people? And so you sort of get a free, you know, you get a free pass on that to a certain degree. You still got to work to get it and get the right content, the right platform, all of those things. But you get a free pass with that with sports, and that's something that's, you know, a big advantage of working in sports.
Yeah, I mean, you know, part of social, especially digital, we always talk about, you know, the digital story or the social storytelling that you're doing.
Yep.
And from a sports standpoint, you know, your story's always right in front of you. It could be something, you know, whether it's four generations of fans at the ballpark, whether it's physically what's happening on the field, or maybe it's, you know, you even have an usher that has a really cool story. There's always kind of that story in front of you. It's you're more so trying to find that story. Sometimes it's, you know, a little more in front of you than not, like in the case of a home run or something like that. But rather than making up, not, you know, big brands, they're not making up stories, but they're trying to pull some stories out of thin air. And, you know, it's not that it's, I don't want to say it's easier said than done, but personally, I just think it's a lot more fun to do it that way.
You're not brainstorming, oh, what can we have? Well, maybe if we get a home run, like you're not writing that story. You're right. It just happens. Right. It happens in front of you. And then you've just got to pick and choose what's going to work. And then that goes back to, you know, who are the fans and what's the fan demographic we're trying to hit up? Like if you want, you know, if your marketing department says, hey, Mac, we want more families at the ballpark, that completely changes your focus on what the content you're going to push out to drive them in. And so, you know, I think that's really important to say, yes, here's all the stories, but it's also the slant and the angle of the story. You've got to think of, you know, what audience is going to consume this, or what do I want the audience to do? So having that direction is really key. But yeah, it's in front of you all the time.
Yeah, and exactly. And, you know, sometimes I always say it's great and sometimes it's awful having that much content in front of you. That's kind of the beauty of having all these different platforms too. You can tell different stories on different platforms as well.
And like you said, with the, you know, the Lakeland Instagram stories, you can start dedicating a channel to or a platform to that. You know, you can go, oh, we're going to have an interview with someone in the crowd every single game. And you can do that because you've got so many games. But it's not something that's going to hit up, you know, you're not going to put it up as a 5-minute web video because no one's going to consume it. But if you say, oh, it's going to be a 30-second Snapchat story where we're going to ask a fan the same three questions every day and fans will be wondering what the answers are going to be, that can fit on Snapchat, or it can fit on Instagram stories, or it could just be a short video on a Twitter web series. Like I guess you've got more tools in your tool belt now to tell those stories.
Exactly.
The last thing I wanted to ask you about, I want to ask you about All-Star voting and I guess how it's like in the craziness of that. So you have, especially the final week vote. So you told me about this before we started, so I'll get you to explain it. And then I guess the craziness that comes out of it. So MLB has the All-Star voting for the All-Star game as a regular occurrence, and then explain what the final week voting comes about.
Yeah, so we have our standard voting that's similar to every other league that lasts for a while. And, you know, the rosters get set for your All-Star game. But usually the final roster spot in both the American League and the National League comes down to four or five different people. And that last week they have what's called final vote. And final vote is where you find out, you don't have very much time to plan because you don't know necessarily who your person is or even if you have one, but you get a short window to plan, and then you have a week-long campaign that you just hit incredibly hard a lot of it is social and digital based because voting is social and digital. But at the same time, you know, you activate in park, you try to activate on TV, through radio, you know, every outlet that you can. But you go nuts advocating for this one guy and promoting this one person to try and get into the final spot in the All-Star game. The last day traditionally from, I believe it's like 10 a.m. to 4 a.m. So it's a short window. Hashtags count as a vote. So, you know, that's where we save some of our craziest content and try to get as many retweets as possible. We do everything from create funny GIFs to reaching out to some of our fans who have large followings, ask them to tweet as many times as they can. We do a ton of giveaways, and it's just, it's nuts. It's a day that, I mean, I'm really not doing that much physical work, but I'm exhausted by the end of the day. Feels like I ran a marathon at the end of the day.
Well, but it is because you're one, your phone's practically levitating off the table with the mentions and notifications. And it really is just we were just talking about before about, you know, brands manufacturing this. It's manufactured by MLB, and all the leagues do it around their All-Star thing, but it does give you that, you know, that singular focus. And sort of talking before about the digital cheer squad, it's sort of the bugle call to say, okay, guys, we're ready to go. This is what we need you to do every time we ask you to do it. So, you know, I think it's, again, and it's just having fun on those particular platforms. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, if I think the NBA's had issues with you know, people like Justin Bieber getting involved and completely skewering the vote. So you know, it's like, well, if we can get someone like Biebs to tweet about us, that would be great. But it is fun, and I guess it is that. You know, how many crazy ideas can we come up with to one, get your fans behind it, but almost go mainstream with it? Because that's almost where it's being pushed now, that you're almost at the limits of your fan base. And so you have to go and do something that other fans go, bravo, Tigers. I enjoy that. I'm going to retweet that, or I'm going to like that, whatever system you want.
Exactly. You got to try and reach some of those. Or like the casual Tiger fan, or, you know, they might be a fan of another team, but they watch the Tigers a lot, you know, because we play them a lot, that type of thing. You want to try and dig into some of those fans to try and get that little extra oomph while you're doing that final vote.
It is funny because it is the brief, it is the silly brief that we've all heard. You know, hey, can you just please make that viral video for us? Right?
Exactly.
It is that brief, but if you don't put you and your team through the paces to go, what is the craziest idea for us to do it? You don't end up in the space to actually potentially produce that stuff, because, you know, in just a regular season, you're never going, oh, let's make sure that this preview, you know, video for this, you know, just regular season game, you're just in the, you know, in the motions of ticking off the box. We've done this piece of content. We've done this piece of content. And it doesn't really get the creative juices going, like the pressure of, you've got 7 days, give us your best stuff, get as many retweets as possible. And that's where the harebrained, silly ideas come out that become viral.
Exactly. That's where you have some really, to be honest, it's where you see, I think, a lot of teams get their most creative out of the year. Usually we, during final vote, usually an American League team will team up with a National League team. Cause you know, there's one spot for each one. And so I remember last year we teamed up with the Pittsburgh Pirates, and their main social media guy and I would text back and forth every few minutes with harebrained ideas. Like, is this too dumb of an idea, or do you think this is a great idea? You know, those types of things where we were just bouncing back and forth. And we came up with some pretty funny GIFs, some pretty funny videos that, or just the random Photoshops. I remember a couple of years ago, we started doing movie posters where we just Photoshopped our players' emoji heads on the front of them, and people went nuts. They thought it was hysterical. And you could actually, and then the other thing I like about Final Vote is you can actually see it then propelling your guy, you know, with his actual votes. You can see the number of votes they're getting rather as just watching engagement numbers. It's, you know, it's a contest. I'm a competitive guy. I'm a sports kid. And so, you know, you want to win.
And that's the thing. I think it's – so even if you're, you know, at the moment MLB has it for, you know, for four teams around the All-Star break, I think, you know, if there's a takeaway from this, how can you get your team manufacture this scenario where you just say, okay, we're just going to make this our crazy week of doing, you know, because it's you're right. You've just said that the teams do their most creative stuff. So you need to create an environment that allows that to happen more often. Whether it's, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's, hey fans, we're going to come up with something new. What do you think? And just sort of getting that playfulness and creativity going and flowing, not just with you, but with your team and letting the wider team, you know, come up with something. Because, again, you know, more, you know, rising tides lift all boats. If you have more people involved and more ideas, it's potentially going to help. So I think there's something there to say, hey, guys, no idea is a bad idea because we know it works in final vote week. So how can we manufacture that? It's hard because how do you manufacture that pressure of, oh, we've got to do it? That comes with that kind of thing. But I think, you know, having that kind of, at least having a workshop where you say, yeah, no idea is a bad idea. Let's put them all on the wall because, you know, you might come up with the idea, but, you know, your colleague might be able to twist it slightly, make it more palatable and find the twist that makes it work.
Yeah, I'm the king of that. My coworkers make fun of me because I'm the king of, like, let's just throw out as many ideas as we can, whether it's for final vote or any big weekend. I say, let's throw out as many ideas as we can. If we have to narrow them down or if we have to funnel something down because of production time or something like that, we can. But let's just throw everything at the wall we can and see what sticks. Because like you said, you know, someone might see a idea that's, you know, real close to the finish line but just needs that little push across and someone else knows how to push it across or make it just that much better.
Definitely. I think doing those and getting the creative juices flowing, whether it's doing something at work or something outside of work. I do an improv class sort of semi regularly where I go there and it's just you have to make stuff up all the time, and it hurts your brain, but but you come away from it, and I find, you know, the weeks or so after doing those classes, that the creative, you know, getting into the creative process is far easier because the, you know, with improv, it's all about just throw out ideas and having someone accept them all the time. And so it just gets you in a better frame of mind for that creative process. So I think, I'm a massive fan of, that no idea is a bad idea. It doesn't mean you have to execute it, but
right.
You want to have an environment where they're always coming out. So getting to we're going to wrap this interview up so you can, finish off your work day. So I'm going to go with the Sports Geek closing five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
So I don't remember exactly which one, but I'd have to guess that I grew up in Minnesota, so I have to guess it would be a Minnesota Twins baseball game.
Okay, out then at Target Field?
Well, it was,
or would it
back
been
when
at
they
Memorial,
had the Metrodome.
Yep. Very good. And What's your favorite food to have at a sports event?
So, I mean, there's a lot of good food, but I'm also just kind of a traditionalist. Give me a hot dog and a beer, and I'm set.
Yep. Because you're right. There's so many gourmet options these days, but why mess with something that works?
I mean, I'll probably try something else, but I always have to have a hot dog as my food at a sporting event.
Yeah, terrific. What's the what's the first app you open in the morning?
So, I think technically the first app I open is my clock app because that's my alarm clock.
Okay. Technically, yes, that might be correct.
Technically, so. but I usually pop open Twitter first, and start scrolling through, see if I missed anything overnight, that type of thing.
Terrific. Who should the Sports Geek podcast listeners follow and why? Whether it be a Twitter follow or an author or someone you're following or reading?
This is a tough one. I would say from a sports standpoint, I always follow Jessica Smith.
Yep.
Her stuff is just, she always seems to aggregate the best of the best. And, you know, a lot of times, some of the other things that I like, she follows or she does blogs and posts about stuff that's not necessarily the best of the best either. It's kind of lessons learned, and it's not in that annoying, like, here's five things we learned from something that happened in the news yesterday. It's like actual content that you can learn from. You know, her and I remember went back and forth about teams that lose playoff games and how they handle it. You know, it's, a lot of times we talk about, oh, this team got great access in their locker room, you know, celebrating all this stuff.
What a terrific video. What a terrific video when you won the world championship. I'm like, anyone can do that.
Right. And so it's just how, I remember we went back and forth, I believe it was at the end of the last NFL season, just talking about how teams handle it, especially because, you know, you're losing and it's, you've built up this great playoff momentum. All your fans are behind you. How? What's the classy way? What's the right way to, and, you know, there is no right answer to that, but what's the brand's right way or team's right way to deal with that loss and handle that loss? Every team's different, but yeah.
But the and the thing is, as the digital department, you've got to be the dark cloud that plans for it.
Yep.
Like, everybody else is like positive. We're gonna win. We're gonna, and you're like, well, if we don't win, we've got still got to have some graphics prepared, and we've got to have a We've got to have a brand message and all of those things. And they're like, don't be the guys that jinx us, digital team. Don't be the guys. it's funny in that sense. But yeah, you're right. You've got to plan for all scenarios. Yeah, yes, you would love to plan for the ultimate success, but yeah, how you handle it, because you know your fans go into a grief almost, and
yeah,
so you've got to be there almost with a, you know, a big digital hug for your fans, and not worry about anybody else. You're just there for your fans and allow your fans to show their support for your team in a really bad time. But yeah, it's a tough one to be the one that's planning for it, because you're
not the most depressing graphic that you have to create.
It is. Lastly, in Kevin Durant style, what social media platform is your MVP?
So here's the question on this one. Is this like from a my personal use standpoint, or is it from like a brand or like the team standpoint?
I'll give me both answers then.
Both. So me personally, I love Snapchat. I use Snapchat all the time. You know, I like it. I like the ability. The one-to-one connection seems a lot different than if I'm DMing someone on Twitter or even like the Instagram messages. For some reason, Snapchat is that platform for me.
Diving in on the Snapchat thing. So is it, are you still like a lot of you, is it an 80% messaging platform, Snapchat, and then you're consuming some of the stories to keep up with people?
Yeah, I'd say I'd say 80 to 20, maybe 70, 30 on some days. But no, yeah, because usually I don't even watch people's full stories until like I get home from work or I'm at lunch, you know, that type of thing. But all day back and forth, we even joke that our graphic designer and I will go back and forth since we don't share a cube or an office.
Yep.
Instead of walking back and forth from our desks, we just Snapchat each other graphics because it's the easiest way to, hey, how does this part look? Or, hey, something's off. And so I'll just circle it on Snapchat and be like, this part, will you look at this part?
Oh, wow. Snapchat as a work productivity tool. There's a use case I would not have thought of. And from the Tigers point of view?
That's a tough one. But I think I'm going to go with the predictable answer. And I'm going to say Facebook, but mainly because we've found a lot of success in paid Facebook ads when it comes to like ticketing and things like that. And so from an overall business objective, you know, every day I'm here for more engagement and, you know, driving page views to the website, you know, all that type of stuff. But at the end of the day, we do want to sell tickets. And so Facebook really champions that best for us.
Yeah, and that does seem to be a pretty common theme. And when you get down to the, I guess, the business drivers of what you're trying to do, just the ad tech that Facebook has behind its infrastructure is, yeah, laser focused. And, you know, if you're doing it properly, and the good thing is, as a content guy, you can be building up the audiences for that, for those campaigns. So
exactly,
that's the benefit that it gives you. Thank you very much for coming to the podcast. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter. It's just at Max Slavin.
You're pretty much Max Slavin everywhere. You've done a pretty good job of securing that as a name. There's no other Max Slavins out there shaking their fists going, oh, I missed out on all those usernames.
Yep.
So, thank you very much for coming on the podcast, and we will chat soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sign up for Sports Geek News at sportsgeekhq.com/signup now.
Thanks again to Mac. You can contact Mac or connect with Mac, Max Slavin, on Twitter, also on the Sports Business Slack. So don't forget, please sign up, check out the Sports Business Slack. As I've said in previous episodes, is now a channel for data and for technology. And we've just passed 850 members. So go to sportsgeekhq.com/slack. You can send Mac a message, post something on the digital channel, tell him that you listen to this podcast. So thank you again to Mac for this episode. I'll close this episode with the sounds of the game, courtesy of the Detroit Tigers opening day. Just a little sample of the craziness that is opening day at the Detroit Tigers Comerica Park. Until next time, my name is Sean Cullinan from Sports Geek, and you've been listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Like the Sports Geek Podcast? Find us on facebook.com/sportsgeek. Check out which teams work with Sports Geek at sportsgeekhq.com/clients. Please leave a review on iTunes. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes. Thanks for listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Go Tigers!
Opening day!